WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
We'd like to take this time to remember the great bandleader Woody Herman. He died Thursday in Los Angeles from congestive heart failure. He was 74. Herman was an accomplished clarinet and saxophone player, but his greatest achievement was as a bandleader, directing innovative soloists and arrangers. Herman's band first became known nearly 50 years ago for their recording of Woodchopper's Ball. Stayed on the road with his big band until failing health made travel impossible. He was also plagued by financial problems. He owed the IRS a hefty sum of money resulting from a business manager's shady dealings back in the 60s. Recently, jazz fans and friends rallied to his support with fundraising concerts. I spoke to Woody Herman in May of 1986 while he was still on the road with his band. He told me that he started his long performing career as a child in vaudeville.
I was a song and dance kid. And then with the money I made from the first or second road tour, I've forgotten, I got my first saxophone and then later a clarinet and started to study with local teachers in Milwaukee.
Had you heard jazz then?
No, I didn't hear jazz really or become aware of it until I got into the teenage stage of life. But when I announced to my mother and father that I was no longer in showbiz and that I was leaving it forever, and I was about to embark on a jazz musician's career, I think they both went into a dead faint because as long as I was in the theater, that seemed safe to them. But being a jazz musician, just like the word jazz, was thought of as a very bad, dirty kind of thing.
This is amazing. First of all, so many parents wouldn't want their kids in showbiz because they think that was unsafe.
Yes.
And then your parents didn't want you in jazz. So
I think everybody has a different concept of what success is.
How did you start that first band? You had been playing with the Isham Jones band.
Isham Jones band. I was with them. And when he retired, there were six of us all together, five others and me. And we decided to band together, stick together, and become a cooperative group. And I was voted to stand in front of the band.
How come you were the one who was chosen to front the band?
Because of my showbiz career background. Yeah, I'm sure of that because I wasn't a slick player at that point, but I was adequate and I knew how to talk to an audience and how to handle people. And that's what the guys... That's why the guys voted me in.
I think you've been very self-effacing in a way as a soloist. Would you have liked to be better known as a soloist?
No. I never had any great desire about that. I wanted to be okay and not get in anybody's way, and maybe I could even add something on occasion. That's what I did.
You've said that you've never thought of yourself as a great clarinetist. How do you feel about the instrument?
I don't like the instrument. I don't think I ever did. I think it's a very difficult, too difficult instrument to express yourself properly.
If you dislike the clarinet so much, how come you played it? Because you also were a saxophonist.
Well, it was the American boy's instrument in the 30s and 40s. You know, it was if you didn't have a clarinet and stood in front of a band, well, what are you there for? It was almost at that point.
There's a lot of musicians that really got started in your band, and just to tick off a few, Stan Getz, Al Cohn, Zoot Sims, Jimmy Giuffre.
Right. The Four Brothers were some of the people that later came on the scene.
What do you look for? How do you audition someone? Let's start with the 30s and 40s. How did you then go about finding people?
Then it was really less difficult if there was somebody that you really liked. And if they were working for someone else, you try to get them to join your band because you were trying to play new things and probably more musical things. And those that wanted to progress joined us, and I think that was a big come on as far as guys were concerned.
The band that you led in the 30s and the early 40s, mm-hmm. you described as a cooperative band that was an offshoot of the Isham Jones band. What was the first band that you really thought of as being yours?
Well, let me tell you why that band was changed, and there was a kind of a different kind of evolution took place, but it was because of wartime. And as people were drafted out and went into the service, we had to get different kind of people, or new people, or people who we thought would work for us. And then I decided that it was now my sole responsibility, and I wanted to do more progressive music than we were doing in the earliest days. And I wanted to improve. I wanted the band to improve and be one that could play all kinds of music and do it well.
Another thing that made that band unique was that it was a big band that was playing harmonies and rhythms that came out of bop. And I think a lot of the big bands really were resisting
that. They weren't
that.
Interested, and I was. So, as a matter of fact, our whole band, shortly before we went into the second herd, if you want to call it that, the Four Brothers herd, I insisted that our whole band, that we would go to hear Charlie Parker at his opening on 52nd Street with Dizzy and a few of our friends, because Dizzy was already writing for our band.
Was it hard to figure out how to incorporate the rhythmic and harmonic innovations of bop into a big band setting?
Well, I think you had to have imagination, and I think that you... In other words, there's two kinds of music, as Ellington said many times, and certainly Stravinsky said it to me personally. Two kinds of music, good and bad, and we were definitely trying to play good.
Second Herd, which was your second band, you organized that in 46 or 47.
47.
And this was just about the time that a lot of the big bands were starting to fold.
That's when they all disappeared, yeah.
Yeah, so you were really going against the tide then by organizing
ways.
A big band. Yeah.
Well, everybody left except Ellington, Basie, and maybe Harry James. And everyone else just took a run for it, and mostly. And...
Was it hard to keep the bands going? Is that why so many of them disappeared?
Yeah, well, financially it was a bust. It was no longer a business. It was now a hobby, and if you could afford it, you did it.
How were you able to do it?
Because I made it a hobby. And I've suffered the consequences ever since, you know. I got into trouble later with the IRS, and I'm still in trouble with them at this late date.
You once said that what would have made the best financial sense would have been after 1946 or so to take your money and invest it, not invest it in a band,
but
invest it.
Yeah, of course.
But obviously you've put music first.
Well, it's been above everything in my lifetime, so sometimes it's been a disservice to me as a person. But that's beside the point, because I still have that love and affection for music. And the Lord has been kind to me. Let's look at it that way.
Woody Herman's band performing Summer Sequence. Woody Herman died Thursday in Los Angeles. I spoke with him in May of 1986.